Hey, I am Tammy, and you are listening to Women Committing Crimes. This is episode 29 about Jeanne Labbe. I'm going to do my best on my French accent. This is my first time to do accents in any of these episodes, so I'm kind of excited. Welcome back to my regular listeners, and welcome to the podcast for our new listeners. This is a true crime podcast about women who have committed all sorts of crimes, from the heinousness of infanticide, like today's woman, to those who have committed fraud or treason in their respective countries, or, you know, I don't know, peeled the skins off their husbands' backs. If you listen to Catherine Knight, disgusting, but, you know, the women are from all over the world and from all time periods as well. It's so interesting, these things. As a reminder also, or new information for those just joining us, the new segments called Secret Spy Sisters will launch on the WCC, that's what I'm nicknaming the podcast, Women Committing Crimes. On the website, though, on June 21st, that's 1 week from yesterday, those podcasts will only be available on the website. So make sure to go to www.womencommittingcrimes.com. All one word, Women Committing Crimes, no capitals, none of that stuff. Just www.womencommittingcrimes.com. And then you'll see the icon, and all the episodes are on the website. Pictures are on the website. There's also a tab for suggestions. There's a tab for all the women on my list so far, and I keep adding some. So, you know, make sure you check that out and see if there's somebody that you'd like to hear about. You can put it on the suggestions page. There will be a tab for the Secret Spy Sisters starting next Monday, June 21st. I'm excited for those episodes. There's so many fascinating women and women spies in history, from Mata Hari, not just from her, but, you know, Mata Hari is one of the more famous ones. But there's also, you know, good and bad ones, ones that spied for the good side and those that spied for the bad side, depending on which side you're on, right? there's also a spy who they don't know who she was, and she just has a number, and that one is from the Revolutionary War, American Revolutionary War. So that one should be, I'm really excited about that one. I haven't decided who to start with yet. I'm going to decide that later today, but, you know, I'm looking forward to all of them. I'm going back as far as I can. So far, I've only been able to verify, like, back to about the 18th century. I know there's more, I know there's bunches before that, so I'm still in the research stage right now. I plan on going into a little bit of a history of espionage, spying, that kind of stuff. That is really fascinating for sure. I'm really kind of stuck on that research right now, actually. So, I want to thank all my listeners. Also, thank you. Thanks to you, this podcast is growing in popularity in all different podcasting sites. Please make sure to rate this podcast on Apple Podcasts as well as other podcasting sites. All those, I'm on all of them, including iHeartRadio. So seriously, giving the podcast a rating boosts us up higher when people look for true crime podcasts, and I'd love to reach more listeners. The more listeners, the better, right? I'd love 5 stars, of course, but you know, if you think the podcast needs improvement, I'd love to hear that too. Some of you repeat listeners remember when I talked about Ty-Ty Claire, and Ty-Ty Claire gave this podcast 1 star on Apple Podcasts, and that was fine. Ty-Ty Claire did say that the podcast is awful, and that it has not improved. It's been around long enough, it should have improved, but the problem was, is Ty-Ty didn't say what parts they had listened to, you know, which ones they had listened to, and which parts they didn't like, which parts needed improvement. Is it the whole thing? I mean, is it, so, you know, please give me some feedback. I would love to hear that. I'm getting some emails, and that's fantastic. I love that. So let's transfer those emails over into ratings on the different podcasting sites. If you are listening on Anchor, please make the podcast a favorite. And I want to shout out, I've done it before, but I want to shout out to Sandra Mara da Silva for favoriting WCC on Anchor. It is much, much appreciated. All right, I think that's it for housekeeping for right now. So let's discuss the ogress of Gatdour. I'm terrible at French, but I'm going to try my best. But there are some parts that are going to be totally me just doing the most outrageous French accent I can. Just because it's fun. In 1874, in the small fishing village of Pampol, France, Jeanne Marie Molinet was born to an Icelandic fisherman and his French wife. She was the oldest of five children. Jeanne was known to take care of her two brothers and two sisters, but was not known to enjoy school. And at the age of 14, her parents gave her money to go to Paris alone. Yeah, I know, 14, going to Paris alone, but it's a different time. As we shall see when it comes to a lot of things, you know, the late 19th century, early 20th century, because that's when this time period is, really is way different than it is now when it comes to certain aspects, especially. In Paris, Jeanne worked several menial jobs, then met Jean Weber. They married in 1894, both at the age of 20, and Jeanne was pregnant, a couple months pregnant, I think. Yes, they both have a very similar name. So the male is Jean and the female is Jeanne. So Jeanne's parents and family were not able to attend the wedding, but Jean Weber's was able to be there, including his three brothers and their wives and their children. Jean was known to be an alcoholic, and Jeanne was a small woman who was said to have rustic manners. I'm not sure what that means. I guess during this time there's polite society and then there's like, you know, farm society, provincial society, and so maybe, you know, manners are a little bit different. And then she was almost illiterate. She did not go to school very often, even before she was 14. All right, so in 1895, a few months after the wedding, Jeanne gave birth to her first child, a boy they named Marcel Jean. Unfortunately, Marcel died 3 months later. The cause was unknown, but it was attributed to pneumonia, and it was said that children of alcoholics were born weak, and they were more susceptible to, you know, getting diseases and stuff, which may or may not be true. We do know that if a mother drinks too much alcohol while she's pregnant, a baby will be born, or possibly will be born with fetal alcohol syndrome, which does have, you know, delayed processing or cognitive, they have cognitive issues, cognitive delays, that kind of stuff that the children do. But as far as the father being an alcoholic and make having the babies be weak, I don't know about that. I really don't. All right, so, and also during this time period, you know, kids die before their fifth birthday and even after their fifth birthday. You know, that's why definitely in the 19th century and even the early 20th century, families have huge, you know, a huge amount of kids. Both my grandparents, let's see, my maternal grandfather and maternal grandmother both had like 10 siblings. My paternal grandfather had like 10 siblings. My paternal grandmother only had two, so that was kind of unusual for the time period, really. They kind of stood out compared to everybody else. So, you know, people often had a lot of children. Kids died before the fifth birthday. This is before vaccinations, so people died of all kinds of stuff. Diphtheria, tuberculosis, all the things that, you know, we take, measles, mumps, rubella, scarlet fever, those kind of things that most of us are vaccinated against today, people died from. So it was not unusual for a child to die at the age of 3 months. But then, let's see, in 1898, the Webers have another son who they also name Marcel. It's kind of a running thing throughout this story, actually, the name Marcel. So they name him Marcel Charles. He makes it past 3 months. So that's, you know, yay for him. Then they have another child in 1901, a daughter this time, who they named Juliette. Unfortunately, she was weak, being the child of an alcoholic, just like her older brother, and died a year later, with the doctor saying it was pneumonia. Again. So the Webers moved to Goutte d'Or, a district in Paris that was considered an unsavory part of Paris at the time. The name means drop of gold, but the French novelist Émile Zola called it a, quote, dark theater of sordid destinies. Most of Jean Weber's family at the time lived in Goutte d'Or, and Jeanne was the neighborhood babysitter. That was pretty much what she did. Jean had different jobs, but Jeanne was a babysitter in the neighborhood, you know, kind of like that Kool-Aid mom kind of person, you know, where everybody goes to their house. That's kind of an old term. So millennials and Zoomers might not know what that means. It just means the mom in the neighborhood, all the kids go over to their house to hang out, usually the most centrally located. Maybe the person that has a pool. I don't know. All right, so let's talk about some of the kids that she babysat. Lucy Alexandra was one child that Jeanne was in charge of. Lucy was the daughter of a widower. There is no age given for Lucy, just that she was an infant, so that's close enough. Well, her father went out, hired Jean to watch Lucy. When he got back, Jean said that Lucy was ill. Lucy died on Christmas Day. This was 1902. Again, this one was attributed to pneumonia. But in 1903, she was hired to watch a little three-year-old Marcel, again, Poyada. When the Poyadas returned, they found Jean hugging the lifeless Marcel, like not just a nice hug, but it was like a squeezing bear hug. The child was taken to the hospital and was pronounced dead from pneumonia a fucking again. She came back a few days later. This is what's creepy. She came back a few days later and tried to take four-year-old Jacques, Marcel's older brother, but Jacques wasn't having any of it and ran away. None of the sources say whether or not the Poyadas knew that she came back. It made it sound like she like walked up onto the farm, saw Jacques maybe playing by himself, and tried to take him. But this is just a few days after Marcel dies. So, I mean, what kind of... that's weird enough. And, you know, I mean, having two of your children die, and they're both 1 year or under, okay. A little girl that you babysit dies, maybe. Again, it says infant. I don't know what that means. As far as real age, but to have, you know, this other, a three-year-old die, and they're told that it was pneumonia, but this woman was huggy, I mean, I don't know, my alarm bells go off. March 2nd, 1905, so 2 years later, Jean's sister-in-law had Jean babysit her two daughters, 18-month-old Georgette and 2-year-old Suzanne. A few hours later, Georgette supposedly had fallen ill, and when the in-laws returned, Georgette was dead. This time it was attributed to convulsions. What they saw but ignored was bruises on Georgette's neck. No sources said the previous children had any bruises on their necks, but, you know, it's starting to get a little suspicious. The same sister-in-law, the same one, had Jean babysit a few days later after they put Georgette in the ground. So March 2nd, her daughter, Georgette, dies. You know, under the watchful eye of her aunt, supposedly. Then, a couple days later, you know, 8 days later, actually, you're going to have her come over and babysit again your two-year-old. I'm still confused, right? It gets worse. This time, two-year-old Suzanne died, and again, the bruises on the neck are ignored. So there's two out of these children so far who at least have definite bruises on the neck. So they're ignored, though, and the child is said to have died again, just like her sister, from convulsions. I don't know if they're saying that those convulsions are from epilepsy, or did they hit their head with the convulsions, or what? It doesn't go into detail. Same month, March 25th, same year, 1905. So just, you know, a couple weeks later, she babysits one of her own brothers. Remember, she had two brothers, two sisters. She babysat her niece, 7-year-old Germain. Germain had a sudden attack of choking. There were red marks on her neck when the doctor was called, but Germain survived. However, Jean was called back the next day to babysit again, and Germain died. Supposedly this time of diphtheria. Diphtheria, you know, is we've talked about it before, I think, in one of our other episodes. Diphtheria, we're all vaccinated against. It's part of the DPT, diphtheria and tetanus, and it does affect your lungs, breathing passages, that kind of stuff. So, you know, this child looks like they've been strangled. Maybe they were clinging at their own throat because they couldn't breathe. I don't know what they're thinking. But 4 fucking days later, seriously, Jean's own son, Marcel, that one surviving son out of the three she had, of three children she had, supposedly died of diphtheria also, and the marks on his fucking neck are ignored also. Again, this is like the early 1900s in France. It still seems to me like somebody wouldn't go, one baby, two baby, three baby, four. That's just the first four. Then there's Georgette, and then there's Suzanne, right? And then now there's her third own child, Marcel. So it's 7 kids so far. 7. All right. So April 5th, 1905, just a month later after Georgette died, Jean invited her two sisters-in-law, right, over for dinner. and they go. She later asked them to run an errand for her, and she would stay behind and watch her nephew, 10-year-old Maurice. And these dumbass bitches did it. They left her alone with Maurice. Two sisters have already died at her hands. Well, you know, of course they're not blaming her. Anyway, they left him there with her. They returned early and saw Maurice gasping on the bed, marks on his neck, and Jean standing over him with a crazy look on her face. The sisters are a little suspicious something is going on because they are so fucking bright. A bunch of regular Sherlocks here, right? Oh my god. So they decide to file charges, and Jean is arrested. Rumors are flying about the neighborhood at this point, right? Some hate her, and some think she is a victim. Because, you know, here's the thing. We are all kind of jaded. We are all kind of, you know, desensitized in a way now when it comes to women and crime. Here I am doing this podcast, right? And there's so many more out there. And there's so many TV shows and, you know, movies and stuff like that, that now we know women are as capable, equally capable with men of heinous crimes. But back at before the turn of the century, women had a reputation, right, of being nurturers, mothers, that kind of stuff, and they would never do something like this. So it's easy for us to judge that these people are dumbasses and don't see that wherever this woman goes, a child dies. Whereas, you know, we're looking at it through maybe a 21st century lens, and I'm not giving her any kind of leeway here, although I do have questions later. But at the same time, you know, I can understand maybe I'm trying to give the tiniest shadow of a doubt to these people that they don't suspect that this supposedly rustic, you know, ignorant, peasant, sweet, nice woman would strangle these kids. So this is what happens. Press make a sensation of the story, and they give her the moniker, the Ogress of Gondor. The trial began on January 29th, 1906. Prosecution alleged 8 murders, right? Her own 3 kids, her 2 nieces, and when looking back, added Lucy and Marcel. There was a big hullabaloo about exhuming the bodies. You know, how could they all have died coincidentally, etc.? Jean had a fancy famous lawyer, Henri Robert, who had made a name for himself in 1889 for defending Gabrielle Bompard. Of course, you know, we'll be talking about her in a future episode, in what's called the Gauffet murder case, as well as Teresa Humbert. I'll talk about her in the future also. Hers was a fraud case. Pretty interesting, actually. Anyway, jurors were reluctant to think the worst of a grieving mother. Remember, her own son died. Her two children, you know, 2 other children of hers had died. She's also grieving about her nieces and stuff, right? So, of course, here's this grieving woman. The jurors don't want to convict her because they can't fathom the idea that this woman could possibly kill anybody. So, February 6, 1906, Jean Weber was acquitted. She was on tons of magazine and newspaper covers, such as Le Matin, which defended her and said she was wronged, as well as La Petite Journal, which said she was a monster. I'll have some of those on the website also. Of course, tons of pictures. A widower farmer named Sylvain Bavouzet wrote to Jean asking her, this is how some people could not fathom back then that a woman would do this, right? So this man, Sylvain Bavouzet, wrote to Jean asking her if she would be a live-in nanny for his kids. A homicidal fucking Mary Poppins, right? So, she said no at first. She's still married, by the way, to Jean. But Jean is an alcoholic, and he's kind of AWOL half the time. And she sees him, she doesn't, whatever. But she did ask about that, and he's like, no, I don't want to move there. And she's like, fine. So, she wanders around. There's like a story about a suicide attempt, about her jumping into the Seine River, but she is saved supposedly by her petticoats and skirts. She jumps into the river, but the petticoats and skirts kind of keep her buoyant, so she just pops right back up, and then she's fished out of the water. So she decides to hell with it, and in 1907, she goes to become a nanny for Bavouzet. She takes the name Jean Glaise, and the 2 tell people that she is Bavouzet's cousin because, you know, you don't want people recognizing her by her name. You know, because God forbid anybody pick up a motherfucking paper and see her picture in the front, but whatever. Bavoisier had three children. Can you guess what happened? On April 7th, 1907, a doctor is summoned to the Bavoisier home, and he is greeted at the door by the nanny. You know who. She leads the doctor to 9-year-old Augusta Bavoisier, who is lying on his bed, dead. The doctor sees the bruises on the kid's neck, ignores it at first, and says Augusta died of convulsions. Later, the doctor and police are told by Bavoisier's other children that Jean Glaze is really Jean Weber. Shocker. There are, again, pictures in the papers. I don't know how people didn't see this, but anyway. The doctor then changed his mind about what killed Augusta. The authorities arrest Jean again. This case has now become world famous, too. So, like, even the New York Times had something to say about it in May of 1907. So this is how the article reads. There's like four headlines. First headline, French ogress, again arrested. Second headline, right underneath, Jean Weber, the accused murderess of children under new charge. Third headline, right below that second one, never been convicted. Fourth headline, right below the other one, France bears out Lombroso's theory of recrudescence of crime in the spring. For those like me, who doesn't know what this means, recrudescence means the recurrence of an undesirable condition. So, and also, we'll see more of Lombroso. His name is Cesare Lombroso. He is Italian, and we'll see him later in the episode, so we'll get back to him later. Paris, May 4th. I'm going to read you the article. Professor Lombroso has remarked that a recrudescence of crime is generally coincident with spring, and the theory seems to be borne out by the present happenings in France. Every day in the last week has been marked by a new horror. In the series, the most interesting psychic case is that of the woman Jean Weber, who is popularly known as the Ogress. Last year, she was accused by her neighbors in Paris of having done to death a number of children placed in her care. The circumstantial evidence against her was so strong that the police took up the case. Seems weird. As an aside, that seems weird to me. The police didn't get it first. Anyway. She was tried at the Seine Assizes and acquitted for lack of material proofs of guilt, although the trial did not completely clear her. It never goes on to explain what that means, by the way. Madame Weber went to the country, to Châtellerault, and the police heard no more of her till a few weeks ago, when stories began to reach Paris of a child that she had been taking care of having died under suspicious circumstances. Since then, the case has been investigated by almost every paper in Paris, with the result that there are almost as many theories as there are papers. The woman was arrested yesterday as a result of a report by physicians appointed by the police to investigate the affair. One suggestion is that Jean Weber, who ordinarily impresses observers as a sweet and good-tempered woman, is the victim of occasional homicidal mania. As an aside, it's a mental illness where a person has the irrational desire to kill. We'll talk about that later, too. Another is that she is a slave of alcohol. Another, and this is the one which obtained for her the designation of ogress, is that she is a cold-blooded, cunning murderess of children for the love of crime. In a signed statement given to a reporter yesterday, she declared that she was the victim of a strange fatality and begged that the fullest investigation be made by authorities, after which she hoped that she would be left in peace. End quote. Now, I do want to say something here. I always want to say something. A slave of alcohol. It is said, okay, first of all, we know that Jean Weber is an alcoholic. It was widely known by everybody. But also, it in lots of different of the sources, said that she also drank a lot. So, I'm wondering, but my question's later. Well, again, she has Henri Robert as a lawyer. Wondering how she's paying for this. A lot of people didn't think she did it, so they actually had fundraisers for her. La Matin, the newspaper, had lots of fundraisers for her, and that helped pay for this kind of stuff. She is again set free because, unfortunately, or fortunately, whatever, an autopsy of Augusta said that he had typhoid, and that's how he had died. Okay. So, Jean decided it was now time to lay low. Anyway, here is where we'll take a quick break so I can thank Byron Alexander for allowing me to use his music at the beginning and into the podcast. The song at the beginning is the instrumental version of Very Well I Know, and the song at the end is Who Both songs are on his absolutely amazing album, Square One. You can find it on Amazon, Spotify, iTunes, YouTube, anywhere you find and buy music. It's a great album. I use it to work out, and, you know, I like to roll my windows down, blast it loud while I'm driving around. I also want to thank my husband, Doug, who designed the logos for this podcast, as well as the podcast Off Kilter No Filter. Off Kilter No Filter is a podcast with me and Byron Alexander, where we discuss everything and anything. Our latest episode will be uploaded this Thursday, where we begin a conversation about musicals. You know, what we like, what we don't understand, ones we have not seen, ones we have and went, ones we had that went, yay! old standards that you might have heard of. All right, so come listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and any other podcast you use, and make sure to give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and all your other favorite podcasting sites, and favorite us on Anchor. Back to Jean Weber. The murdering bitch is laying low. She later reappears at Children's Home in Orgaville that was run by people who thought she was innocent. They sought to, quote, make up for the wrongs that justice has inflicted upon the innocent woman, end quote. Well, this backfires on these idiots. Jean, under the name Marie Lemoine, was caught strangling a child, like red-handed, and was just quietly dismissed. And they covered it up. The assholes didn't want the hospital to have a bad reputation, so they let this woman just go and kill other people. Kill other kids. It's not like she's killing other people, like grown-ups. Not that that's any better, but it kind of, yeah, it's different, right? Seems like a grown-up has a like, literal fighting chance, whereas a kid doesn't. Jean heads back to Paris. She is arrested for vagrancy and confesses to the crimes, saying, I am the woman who killed the children in the Couture, end quote. Then she later denies it. So they think she's a little bit crazy and send her to Nanterre Asylum, where she meets with doctors who basically pronounce her sane and set her free. She's still married, remember, like I said, to Jean, but starts hanging out with a drifter, and they go and check into an inn in Commercy in 1908. This is where it gets really tricky for her. All right, so 1908. The drifter eventually leaves, and all right, so Jean tells the Poirots, yes, the Poirots, the innkeeper family, that she is scared to sleep alone at night. She asks them if their 10-year-old son, Marcel, another Marcel, could sleep in the same room with her. Okay, first of all, creepy, and for me as a parent, fuck no. No. But for some dumbass reason, this family lets their son sleep in the same room as a strange woman. Now, we all know women are pedophiles just as much as men, right? Most, there's probably more women under the radar with this, but they're there. And just, but, you know, this is a whole different ballgame back then, I guess. Anyway, so nothing happened that night, but the next night she asked for the same, and the kid seems, you know, Marcel seems a little reluctant, but his family makes him go and stay in the same room. All right, then the woman in the room next to them hears things and later tells the police. Quote, around 11 o'clock, I heard strange sobs and smothered screams from the next room. I got up quickly and went to Monsieur and Madame Poirot and told them that something was wrong. We all went together to Jean Rabot's room and opened the door. The little boy lay dead in the bed with his head thrown back and his eyes protruding. His tongue was bitten and had been bleeding. End quote. So they walked in on Jean straddling this kid. He's dead, but she is still strangling him with a bloody handkerchief, and Mr. Poirot has to punch her in the fucking face 3 times to get her off the little boy. It's like she's in this trance, and she's just continually strangling him with this bloody handkerchief, right? When the police searched the room, they found 3 bloody handkerchiefs and blood stains on the floor that looked like someone had tried to clean it up. Some sources say she bit his tongue off. I mean, what the fuck? Some say that he had bitten his tongue while she was strangling him. Either way, this is bad, right? She is like caught for sure, and he has to punch her 3 times to get her to stop. And this is a grown man punching her in the face, right? All right, so she's arrested again. This time she is found guilty, but was declared insane on October 25th, 1908. Remember that Lombroso guy? All right, so here's where he comes into play. His name was Cesare Lombroso. He was an Italian criminologist who had a theory called anthropological criminology. He was into all kinds of stuff, including phrenology. Remember, that's where you read the bumps on a person's head. Okay, I mean, it's psychology is like it's in its infancy right here, right? Lombroso said that criminality was inherited genetically, and that you could identify a criminal by their physical, I'll put this in air quotes, defects, okay? Sloping forehead, ears of unusual size, asymmetry of the face, excessive length of arms. I have at least one of those. It's pseudoscience bullshit, of course. He died in 1909, luckily, and I say luckily because, you know, psychology needed to move on. But I do admire, you know, he and others who were into criminology, trying to figure out the criminal mind. We're still trying to figure out the criminal mind, right? I mean, that's one of the reasons why I do this podcast. I'm very fascinated by the criminal mind. Most people are. And psychologists and scientists and everybody's trying to figure out just the human mind, much less a criminal mind. You know, what makes it different? But this guy is definitely a fucking quack. He gave testimony about Jean being insane by just being shown a photograph of her. So this is what he said. Quote, her microcephalic skull, her flattened forehead, and her virile physiognomy make her an epileptoid, hysteric, and cretinoid, certainly from a family of morons. Oh my God. End quote. Oh, just from looking at a photograph. What a dick. She wasn't pretty, but honest to God, if I didn't know, I wouldn't necessarily say she was a criminal. Then again, most people in black and white photos from the turn of the century look weird to me anyway. I don't know about you. Jean Weber went to Maryville Asylum and was there for about 10 years. Then in 1918, orderlies found her body. Seriously, she had actually strangled herself. And I don't mean hung herself. I mean strangled herself. I mean, that's so weird to me because, you know, most of us have such a will to live that, you know, to do something like commit suicide, you don't use just your own hands, right? There's always a tool, whether it's a gun or a noose or something like that, right? It takes a very strong-willed person, or definitely somebody who has issues, mental issues. Obviously, she should have been in an institution for a while. But it takes somebody very determined to do that. So, like, it always reminds me when I hear of somebody doing that, like, you know, Virginia Woolf puts rocks in her pockets and walks into the lake or whatever to drown herself, you know. That's just, man, it always reminds me of the movie Million Dollar Baby, where Hilary Swank's character, main character, right, she is now a quadriplegic, so to her life's over. And she bites her own tongue off to hopefully bleed to death so she doesn't have to face a future as a quadriplegic. So that kind of determination is just, it's beyond me, to kill yourself without any other means other than, you know, your own hands or teeth. So either way, she had strangled herself. And I wonder about some things. Was she in like a fugue state, a dissociative fugue state when she murdered those children? The DSM, or the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the DSM-5, defines it as a dissociative order and a rare psychiatric disorder characterized by reversible amnesia for personal identity, including the memories, personality, and other identifying characters of individuality. I'm not really sure it's this, because usually this is like people get up and just like go for a drive and never come back, or come back months later. And in the short term or the long term, because it says, you know, it could be a year, couple years also, you know, they get a whole new identity and then they come back to their own identity. I don't know about that. You know, was it a dissociative personality disorder, which used to be called multiple personality disorder? I don't know about that either, because 90% of the time when she wasn't killing a kid, she was herself. She had a couple aliases, but who doesn't? Especially if you are a female, get married and take on names, right? And psychology was in such an infant state at the time that it's really, you know, it's fascinating to think that, you know, she probably had something, or maybe it's like the newspaper said, maybe she just was a cold-blooded psychotic killer that wanted to kill kids just to commit a crime. Just seems like there's other crimes to commit if you're going to commit a crime. But, you know, as far as a woman is concerned, you know, murdering children, they're helpless, right? No matter what age they are, until they get bigger than you or at least your size, they are helpless. So if you're going to be some kind of homicidal maniac, that makes it easier for a woman, right? So I just, yeah. So we'll never really know about Jean Weber, a woman committing crimes. Thanks so much for listening today. If you have a comment, question, or suggestion for an episode, email me at womencommittingcrimes@gmail.com or comment on the website. I'd love it if you went to the website. It's fantastic. I'm working on it all the time. It looks good. I like it. Go to it at www.womencommittingcrimes.com. I'll even read your email or comments on the podcast, unless you'd rather remain anonymous. If you want to remain anonymous, that's cool. Either put anonymous. On the website, by the way, your emails are not shared with other people. It's only shared with me. They're not shared with anybody else on that website. So if you want to remain anonymous to everybody else, that's cool. Please support this podcast. That would be great. Go to anchor.fm/Elizabeth-Chase and click the support button. You can make a one-time donation or sponsor on a monthly basis. It would actually be greatly appreciated. I'm trying to, I will eventually get to where I can monetize the website with, you know, some kind of system with that too. Please give this podcast 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, as I've asked before. Make it your favorite on other sites. Thumbs up. Give a review. Don't, you know, I mean, I would love it if you gave it stars and stuff, but I also would like some verbal feedback on those podcasters. All right. So here we are at the segment where I go into the fishbowl and I pull out a woman. Right. And that woman is Cheng Shuping, or Sister Ping, human trafficking from China. Excellent. I love that. A different type of crime. And I think that's it for us today. Let's go out with some more French music. The girl in the picture's actually got a beret on. It's funny. All right, I'll talk to y'all next week. Be safe. Be good. Bye.